Private Banking Today from Standard Chartered.
Hello and welcome to Private Banking Today, a podcast series from Standard Chartered about the latest wealth management trends. I'm your host, Chloe Tilley, and each episode we'll be joined by expert guests for their specialist insight into our theme. This episode, we're focusing on investment asset allocation and the relevance of the 60-40 portfolio mix. Well, joining me here in the studio from Standard Chartered Private Bank is Grant Parkinson, Head of Consumer, Private and Business Banking for Europe. Hi, Grant.
Hello, Chloe.
And from KKR, a leading global investment firm, Andrew Cox, Director of Global Wealth Solutions. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Chloe.
And joining us remotely, Paula Campbell-Roberts, Chief Investment Strategist, Global Wealth Business Managing Director at KKR. Hi there, Paula.
Hi, Chloe.
Now, the 60-40 portfolio mix has been a popular asset allocation strategy ever since Nobel Prize-winning American economist Harry Markowitz developed his modern portfolio theory back in the 1950s. So, Grant, first of all, just explain to us, what is the 60-40 portfolio?
Well, Chloe, and just for our listeners, since this is a podcast, to be clear, I wasn't there in the 1950s. But when I studied it in the 1990s, it was relevant then as it is today. Markowitz proposed that the optimum portfolio from a risk versus reward perspective should incorporate not only return expectations for the level of risk undertaken, but also how much each asset is correlated with other assets in the portfolio. Now, modern portfolio theory then takes this risk, return, and correlation for all assets to calculate the inefficiency frontier. Effectively, the lowest level of risk that you can undertake for an expected level of return. Now, in the case of a portfolio comprised of two asset classes, stocks and bonds, that optimal mix tends to be about 60% stock, 40% bonds.
We know that from 1995 to 2021, the performance of the 60-40 portfolio produced an annual return of just under 10%. That's according to the Centre for Research in Security Prices data. Paula, can you explain why did it prove attractive during this period?
Sure. The 60-40 portfolio proved attractive during this period because we were in a fundamentally different macroeconomic regime, one characterized by lower inflation and lower interest rates. This portfolio then allowed investors to take advantage of the growth in equities, especially if you think about the tech boom during the later 1990s, while the fixed income portion provided a buffer against market volatility. As such, equities and bonds exhibited low correlation. So what that means is when stock prices fell, bond prices often rose, which helped to stabilize the portfolio during periods of stock market downturns.
So how is today's environment for the 60-40 allocation different?
This is the critical question, Chloe. In 2022, the traditional 60-40 portfolio returned negative 18% as both stocks and bonds underperformed. Global equities contracted by negative 19.5%, and global bond values declined nearly 16.2% over that period. Now, what was occurring was that rising input and borrowing costs put pressure on corporate margins, causing elevated market volatility in 2022, which fundamentally affected company stock performance. Concurrently, on the back of higher inflation, higher interest rates led to a decrease in the value of long-duration inflation-sensitive fixed-rate bonds. So today, we're just in a very different environment defined by this higher inflationary bias that we expect will persist. The implication is that with this higher inflation bias, higher rates, the correlation between stocks and bonds will remain elevated, and returns, especially in public markets, will be challenged over the next 5 years. So to put a pin in it, large cap public equity returns may be lower than they have been in recent history as these higher input costs challenge earnings growth and higher interest rates constrain multiple expansion. On the other hand, while we're more constructive on fixed income returns, increased inflation volatility may erode the value of future bond cash flows. So against what I've just described, private markets then become a more critical part of the portfolio, especially if you want to achieve the same level of returns that the 60-40 used to deliver, and also if you want to hedge against inflation, reduced volatility, which we only expect to be higher going forward, and increased diversification.
And against that backdrop, how can clients adjust their portfolios?
Very importantly, we recognize that not all investor goals are the same. So we have created three proprietary asset allocation models to guide investors on how to leverage private markets to achieve these three core goals that are most prevalent among individual investors. They are generate income, preserve capital, and boost return. Given the environment we've just described in terms of higher inflation, higher rates, and slower real economic growth, it's no surprise then that there's increased focus on the boost return portfolio, which has outperformed the 60-40 portfolio by 1.8% over the past 10 years. And our aspirational framework for the allocation to alternatives is described in our 40-30-30 framework, where if you're able to give up liquidity, we recommend allocating 30% of your assets to alternatives.
And Paula, for high net worth individuals, what's the optimal alternatives allocation?
Well, let's contextualize that. Globally, private investors on average only allocate 3% of their assets to alternatives versus 10% for Dutch pensions or 20% for U.S. pensions or 50% for U.S. endowments. The gap between individual and institutional investors is material. But with the introduction of these new innovative evergreen products, for example, the availability of alt solutions tailored for individuals is dramatically changing that. But still, the optimal allocation depends on the core goals investors are trying to achieve and their ability to give up some liquidity in an effort to achieve excess return or benefit from the illiquidity premium.
Grant, let's get your thoughts on the future relevance of the 60-40 mix versus a diversified portfolio with more asset classes than just stocks and bonds. What are you saying to your clients right now?
As always, the right portfolio for any client still comes down to tailoring that portfolio to the client's risk profile, what their individual liquidity needs are, and the return objectives for that pot of money. We have evolved our asset allocation to include portfolios with alternatives. We call them Foundation Plus. Now, for high net worth clients and family offices who have longer term portfolio objectives and can allocate a portion of their assets to less liquid assets, we would allocate up to 28% of a portfolio to alternatives and private market assets. So these clients are now seeing much greater exposure to these investments in their portfolios, and they'd include hedge funds, commodities, private equity, and private credit, all contained in a well-diversified, well-rounded portfolio.
Now, Andrew, what have you seen in the way institutional investors have diversified their asset allocation to respond to, for example, a downturn in performance?
I think it's well known that asset classes like private equity can deliver a premium or excess above listed equities. In fact, if you look back over the last 25 years, this premium has been something like 575 basis points or 5.75%. over listed equities. And so this is why institutional clients, pension funds, and endowments have been allocated quite heavily to this asset class, but unfortunately not individual investors. And so if you look at the data in the US, pension funds and endowments have had anywhere from 30 to 50% of their assets invested into private markets, and they've been doing it for the past 30 years. Individual investors in the US have less than 3% allocated to private markets, and these tend to be high net worth investors. So it's not broad-based access to the asset class. But to answer your question sort of more directly, Chloe, the reason pension funds and endowments have large allocations to asset classes like private equity is because it tends to be a lot less volatile, and so that's a measure of risk, than listed stocks, and can deliver that return premium that we just talked about. So I think these asset classes also can act as a shock absorber for investment portfolio during, you know, tougher markets and help portfolios outperform as well. And this has certainly helped famous institutions like the Yale Endowment outperform public markets and traditional 60-40 portfolios for long periods of time. So I think I would certainly like to see this private market toolkit being made available to private clients as well.
And how can clients achieve their assets allocation?
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out that asset classes like private equity also bring tremendous diversification benefits to a portfolio and represents a much larger opportunity set. So if you look at the number of listed companies in the US in the 90s, there were about 8,000 listed companies with shares on exchanges. Today, that number is only 4,000. So you've seen a huge shrinking in listed equity markets. And this is despite the fact that the US economy has grown by something like $20 trillion over that time period. So it's also interesting that U.S. indices like the S&P 500 have become much more concentrated in fewer names. So the top seven stocks, the Magnificent Seven or whatever they're referred to today, constitute more than 30% of the value of the index. And so as an investment manager, that actually makes me feel a little uncomfortable. I think in contrast, if you look at, you know, the private markets, there's something like 27 million private companies in the US, which I think represents a huge opportunity set and is a place where we certainly find, you know, incredible innovation and entrepreneurship. So in our view, I think clients should think about this when sort of reimagining their portfolio. And as Paula mentioned, I think that the strategic asset allocation should have a meaningful share invested in private markets. And we talked about a mix earlier of about 40-30-30, 40 equities, 30 bonds, 30 private markets. I think the problem is that the access to these private markets has just been very difficult for individual investors.
So how can private investors best access alternatives today and shed light on evergreen and drawdown vehicles?
I think one of the reasons individual investors haven't been able to access the benefits of alternative asset classes like private equity, private credit, infrastructure, real estate, is simply because they haven't had the right legal and regulatory structures in place. In fact, the legal structure for private equity, known as closed-ended funds or drawdown funds, hasn't really evolved since the 70s. That's when our founders, Henry Kravis and George Roberts, literally came up with this framework. So I think the problem with these structures is that they don't work effectively for private clients. You generally have to lock your money up for a 10-year term, so you have zero liquidity. You have to wait for 3 to 5 years for your money to be called down or drawn down. And so your deployment and your investment pace is really slow. And it takes a while for value creation plans for our portfolio companies to take effect. And this phenomenon is known as the J-curve. Investment minimums also tend to be high in these closed-ended structures, anywhere from $1 million to $5 million. So we think this space is really ripe for disruption, and we've been working for the past 2 years to build these evergreen or open-ended structures to resolve some of these issues that we've just talked about. And so I think this new generation of vehicles operate much more like a traditional investment fund, very familiar, I think, to clients. And you have an ability to invest on a monthly basis and redeem on a quarterly basis, subject to some limits. You invest into a fully invested portfolio of private equity deals, so you're instantly deployed. Your money is working for you on an ongoing basis straight away. And the minimums can be as low as $25,000. And I think what's particularly interesting about these vehicles is that because you are immediately invested and because you are compounding on a monthly basis, the return profile of these funds tends to be pretty compelling versus the old closed-ended or drawdown structures. And this is despite having to hold additional cash in these open-ended vehicles to fund the liquidity for clients. I think on the point of redemptions or withdrawing from these types of structures, it's important to note that there are usually limits associated with pulling your money out on a quarterly basis. And I think that's important as the underlying investments really are illiquid. These are private companies or private credit investments or private infrastructure. And those assets can't be readily sold. So clients should certainly, at least in our view, seek financial advice before investing in these structures. And I think that's where our friends at Standard Chartered can certainly help out.
Well, finally, Grant, how could evergreen strategies like this be relevant and adopted by private investors?
So picking up on what Andrew was just saying, our clients look to us not only to help build, but also very clearly for their preservation of their wealth over time. And as we've been discussing today, alternative assets have outperformed traditional asset classes through some significant periods of bond and equity market volatility. So with this increasing availability of evergreen semi-liquid vehicles for private investors, we do believe that they should play an increasing part in asset allocation to help achieve the client's target returns for the degree of risk that they're prepared to take on.
Well, that's all for this episode. Thank you all so much for a really interesting, really valuable conversation. I'm very grateful to you. Grant, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Paula, thank you.
Thanks, Chloe.
And Andrew, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Well, do join us again soon when we'll continue to explore the latest wealth management strategies. Also, remember, you can subscribe to this series so you won't miss an episode. From me, Chloe Tilley, Grant Parkinson, Paula Campbell-Roberts and Andrew Cox, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Private Banking Today. Back soon.
The information in this podcast by KKR covering past performance and market data and analysis was taken from KKR's Wealth Insights report and other sources. Please note, some of the market performance data discussed was as of December 2022 and therefore may have been subject to change. The information discussed has been provided for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment advice, nor is intended to offer sufficient information to be relied upon when making a decision to buy, sell, or hold any financial products. You should consult your own advisors before engaging in any transaction. We would also highlight that past performance is not a guarantee of future results and that the value of investments may fall as well as rise.